This is CliffCentral.com.
Jan Klose is an award-winning pop singer and songwriter. I'm fascinated by the fact that this guy was raised in Nairobi, South Africa, and in Germany, and he now lives in New York City. I mean, talk about a variety of places to come from. Wow. How would you describe yourself to anyone if they said, where are you from?
I'm from planet Earth.
It's the only decent answer.
Global citizens is right. The future.
So, Jan, you've released 5 albums, 2 EPs. You've already performed in South Africa before. You've been here a couple of times. And people here love you. So are you happy to be back?
Very.
And
yes.
How long are you here for?
This time I'm here until middle of October. October 12th, I fly back to New York.
Very good. So why do you live in New York? I mean, look how wonderful this place is.
You know, I know it's – I was going to say it's you know, people say, so what's it like? What's living in New York like? And I say it's loud. It's loud.
It's never quiet.
It's really loud.
Every morning there are taxis hooting and ambulances. Yeah. And
that's the one word, my one word description of New York City.
So
loud.
I love New York. Whereabouts in New York City do you live?
I live up by the Botanical Gardens in the Bronx.
Oh, very nice.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's a little bit better than Manhattan.
It's a little more quiet there. It's more neighborhoody. Oh. It's not Manhattan.
So look, you have had an incredible career already, and there's so much still going on. But we've had Billboard Top 10 charts. We've had Independent Music Awards. We've had Grammy nominations. And this just seems to me to be the kind of CV that any musician would be very, very happy with. Why are you working so hard?
You know, I was talking about to my manager, Carla Chiata, about this. And, you know, a lot of the time I have felt in the last 10, 15 years since I really, you know, when I really started pushing very hard and things started happening for me, I did eventually feel like there was a carrot in front of my face that I kept chasing. And that was, you know, tied to the back of my head. And I think in the last 2 years, I've been talking to a lot of people and friends about this. I started to say, you know, if I keep going like this, I'm going to get sick. You know, I'm going to just push and push and push, and I'm not going to enjoy any of it. So I decided I wanted to do things differently with this record. And this record that I'm currently working on in South Africa. And I wanted to take a different approach. I wanted to find the fun in music again. And that's why I'm going through right now. Like, I'm in the middle of this transformation of remembering why I started doing this in the first place.
Do you like recording? Because it's a very different experience to touring and doing shows.
Honestly, I prefer recording. I mean, touring, I did it for, have been doing it for really the last 15 years nonstop, you know, first with Broadway shows, then as a solo act, and, you know, in Europe, in America, in Africa, in Asia. And, you know, being in the studio and sitting down and having time to create something on my own pace without chasing the next show and getting on the next plane or train or car. There's something about that. And with this record, I've had so much fun because I've had time.
You never get that. Usually it's always deadlines and studio time is expensive and you can never really spend enough time in the studio. Yeah. You feel like this time you actually had a little bit of something to play with.
Yes. And it's thanks to the Academy of Sound Engineering in Johannesburg and Cape Town that I'm working on this record with. You know, they were instrumental in making that happen.
I'm happy you mentioned them because a lot of times in South Africa, people who are either South African artists who record here or even international artists, they seem to think that somehow you're going to get a substandard delivery down here, that the quality of the production might not be of international standard. And even though we've produced countless brilliant albums here, there still seems to be this insecurity about how good we are from a sound engineering point of view. Would you rate South Africa, having had this experience now, as being as good as the rest of the world?
Yes, and more. You know, I feel like maybe it's because there is this mentality of, you know, you're the underdog. It makes you work harder. And to me, that's what I'm getting. Really, I would say 99% of the time, I feel like I've been getting people going above and beyond.
Do you do all the stuff in the studio? I mean, you obviously have people assisting, you have producers and that kind of thing going on. But when it comes to actually putting the music together, is that you?
It's me and RJ Benjamin on this record. And he's the producer of the record. And between the two of us, the arrangements are what you will be hearing when the record comes out are the two of us. And RJ is, he's one of those guys that will take an idea and be able to flesh it out, score it, get the musicians. He knows all the musicians. Yeah. He could put together the gig and you're there.
He's a very talented guy. I had him in here the other day. We were talking about all the things that he's done in his career, and he still seems to intimate that his most favorite talent is the ability to, A, write songs, which is obviously something you share with him, but second of all, it's a far more specialized thing, and that is to produce mm-hmm. music, because that production is like the magic ingredient. It can take a mm-hmm. great melody, a well-put-together idea, and make it an even better, bigger song. It mm-hmm. can, it can transform the whole thing, or it can destroy it.
It can.
So you sometimes, when you, as the songwriter or the artist, you hand over your baby to the producer. You really are taking your life in your hands, mm-hmm. right?
Sometimes it's a scary thing.
Disaster.
We were just talking about that. Melissa and I were just talking about this. I was scared to death because I'd never done anything on this scale. You know, with, there's a lot of artists on this record, a lot of international artists, a lot of moving parts. I didn't know anyone. I didn't know any of the musicians other than RJ.
Right.
I'd worked with a couple of the co-writers.
What made you trust him? I mean, he's a nice guy, but you don't know.
It was, you know, it was the vibe, you know, like when we met a year ago at a BMI. BMI is my performing rights organization, at a songwriting camp in Cape Town. And it was him, James Stewart. He used to be in a band called The Usual, and myself. We were the first. That was my first pairing for the day. And we started working, and I immediately saw that RJ was A, very intelligent, very, very, very knowledgeable when it comes to style. And he had spent the time, you could tell he was someone that had spent time listening to every genre and every kind of music, because he understands that that creates a rounder picture for himself,
I've taught him everything I know.
You know, yes. And I listened to your interview and I thought it was great. And And then James, you know, added
also very talented, a
wonderful
guy.
Guy, a lovely guy. And between the three of us, we had this song at the end of the day that was finished, written and produced. And I was like, this guy is a machine, you know. Like, and we on that day, on that first day, we started talking about producing, and he was like, I'd love to, you know. And I was just joking, you know. I was like, oh yeah, maybe we can make a record. And it turned into a reality. And all these pieces started coming together, and there was all these other writers that are on the record, like that were also at this camp: Karin Zoid, Tamara Day, Zion, Shekana. Shekana's not on that record, but I'm hoping she'll use one of the songs we wrote together with Zion. And I mean, the list just kept getting bigger, and the Academy of Sound got involved, and then we connected with Tutu Desk, which is the charity.
That's right.
So there's all these pieces started coming together, and here we are.
It's also important from a business point of view that your producer has a good churn rate. Like, they have to be able to turn out a song. You can't sit there like Leonard Cohen for 12 years trying to perfect a goddamn song.
Well, you can, but...
No, but I mean, not everybody has that luxury. Mm. And if you're in the commercial music business, you need to be able to deliver an album, you know? Put out that whatever it is, even if it's single, it needs to come out. You have to set deadlines. Yeah. And I reckon that there's probably some of that in RJ too that we haven't discussed. But enough about him. I mean, I'll get you here to talk about RJ. I'm interested in what your your music is, because it's rooted, you say, in pop, folk, rock, jazz, and blues. So that's pretty much everything.
It is everything. You know, I'm of the Duke Ellington school. You know, there's two kinds of music. There's good music and not so good music. Everything else is, you know, taste.
Where did it all start for you? Where did it all start to make sense?
You know, here, I think. You know, when I was 8 years old, we were living in Johannesburg at the time, in Northcliff. Mm-hmm. And my parents were music fans. They liked performance. They loved African culture. They loved to travel. So the first music that I was exposed to was African music. And I think that sparked something in me. And I remember telling my grandmother, who was after my parents divorced, my grandparents moved from Germany to Johannesburg and lived with us and helped raise us, my brother and I. And I remember saying, I want to be a singer. And it was as clear as day. I remember the moment. I remember where I stood in the room.
Did everyone in the family go, oh, no, this is going to be a horrible disaster because now we're going to have to support him forever?
Absolutely.
Because no parent's ever thrilled to hear those words Never. Coming from their child, right?
My grandmother was appalled. She was appalled. She said,
Why can't you be an engineer or a doctor or a lawyer or something?
Or a lawyer. You're very smart.
Yeah.
Why don't you do that instead?
But this is a problem for a lot of musicians because a lot of them are really smart people. Yeah. And music is also full of lazy people. And for the smart ones, it's very frustrating to have to get them all motivated and make them do things. Because a lot of musicians will just sit with a guitar for days on end, paying absolutely zero attention to the amount of time that's passed.
You know, that tying into that energy, you either have it or you don't. I think if you have it, you still have to work at it. Mm. So it isn't. It's never going to be easy, no matter where you are in your career. You know, it's never going to be easy. It can be. It can get better. It can get better, but it's never going to be easy. And I think the worst expectation to have is that it's some kind of fun ride. There's a lot of fun to be had, you know, but there's a time for fun and there's a time for work. If you don't know the difference, you're not going to last.
And there's either a hit or there isn't. And something yes. either works commercially or it doesn't. And you can very yes. easily, if you are self-indulgent, find yourself in some back catalog, hidden genre, you know, kind of in the middle of nowhere music that maybe 10, 20 people will find and love.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could try and make yourself a commercial success.
Yes, it's a difficult thing to think about because, you know, and as an artist, I don't think necessarily, you don't think in those terms when you start out. You Mm-mm. think in terms of this feels great. I want to do this. I feel a sense of satisfaction when I play the guitar or when I'm, because when I've written a song.
In the beginning, you've only got your intuition to guide you, right?
That's it.
You don't know. You can't bring in a research group when you've written
Yeah,
a small part, the first eight bars of what you think you're going to be doing. And no one's going to know what to make with that.
You think you know, though. You think you know.
But you have to trust.
And you don't.
You have to trust your gut.
Yes.
So is that how it works for you? You sit, you come up with an idea, you start putting a song together, and then you see how far you can take it.
Basically, yeah. I mean, it's a feeling. There's a sort of an overwhelming sense of emotion that's associated with a good song to me, and it's a feeling that will take you through the day whether you've made a penny or not that whole day. If I write a song, and I feel strongly about it, it's the best feeling, and you don't know where it's going to go, but you have a feeling, you have a vibe about a song, and then you go, well. Now, you know what, now I do this, now I know I have, you know, I have people I know, I can have connections, I can run stuff by people, you know, I can say, what do you think about this song? How do you think this would fit? You know, is this, you know, in addition to how I feel about it, you know, because I'm going to be excited about something, but not necessarily everyone else will be. And the song that you think, you know, isn't going to be that great or is going to be just so-so might just be the one where all of a sudden that everyone jumps on. You know, you just, you never really know. All you can do is take it and do the best you can with it and push it out, work it, and let it go.
But you did say there's that emotional thing that happens when you know there's something in
yes.
a song. So that's a feeling that's activated just by,
yes.
you know, there's no mathematical or scientific Mm-mm. way to prove that this is going to work or this is not going to work as a song. But when you're formulating it, when it appears to you, when you deliver it for the first time, whether it's writing, whether it's sitting there with a guitar, whether it's sitting there with a keyboard in front of you, whether it's just humming a melody, are you ever, like, do you ever get really excited because you can immediately tell that there's the germ of something magnificent there?
Yes.
And that you also just feel.
You feel it. It's, now this is getting quite personal, but I have some of my best ideas when I'm running, when I go for a run. Maybe it's the endorphins, natural sort of
right.
state of happiness.
Okay.
Or when I'm in the bathtub.
Do you have your phone there and do you record
yes.
stuff?
Yes.
Okay. Have you got any recordings on you right now?
Uh-huh.
Embarrassing with you just having run like 20.
I do.
And then you record. Da, 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 da.
Basically.
Is that what happens?
Yes. Jeez. I'm out of breath going la, 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 la.
And for you, when you're running or when you're in the bathtub and those things happen, is that almost you become a little bit superstitious about it almost? So you're almost ready for something to happen when you go for a run or when you're in the bath.
The thing is you don't really, it doesn't, it's not planned. It just pops up. Like there's a melody that just
Thank
shows
God for
up.
These things, right? These phones.
Oh yeah.
Because otherwise how would you'd lose.
I've lost quite a few before the age of the iPhone.
It would drive me crazy if you'd come up with something amazing and you're
yes,
thinking about
it. Yes, it's happened.
Do you write music?
A little bit, but okay. yeah.
Because before, if you couldn't write music and you didn't have some mm-hmm. easy to use way to record something, mm-hmm. It's gone.
So, I mean, I had mini disc before that, or, you know, even the tape, you know, before that. But yeah, I mean, and sometimes I'll wake up from a dream and there'll be a melody playing. And, one song, it's called Beautiful Dream. It's on an album I did called Reverie.
Yes.
I woke up and the dream was me on a plane and something, this was post 9/11, and I thought about 9/11 for a long, long, long time. And I had this dream. I was on this plane and there was this little girl sitting next to me. She was maybe like 6 or 7 years old and she was really scared. And I talked to her in the dream. I tried to calm her down and there was nothing wrong. Nothing, you know, it was, we were just flying. And there was a song playing on the intercom. You know how like that the intercom mm. will, when you first get on the plane, there's just like a song playing and it's something like elevator music type mm-hmm. of thing. And this song was playing and I was like, oh, what's that song in my dream? I was thinking, what is that song? It sounds like a U2 song. And in my dream, it was a U2 song. Then I woke up and I started, and the song was still playing in my head and I started humming it. And I thought, that's not a U2 song at all. It's mine. That just arrived. And I got up. It was the middle of the night. It was like 4 o'clock in the morning. I got up and I recorded the idea and it turned into one of the songs I'm like proudest of that I've written.
It's amazing. I love that. That creative process is the thing that I'm most fascinated by and that I'm most jealous of in other people.
It's a strange thing sometimes.
Does it ever get in your way? Are you distracted sometimes in a meeting?
Sometimes I feel guilty if I don't address it. Like if I have an idea and I go, oh, you know, fuck,
like
I
it's there, it's bugging you
like,
until
yeah,
you pay
like,
it attention.
I need to do something about this and I can't right now. And then, damn, you know, yeah, definitely.
And is it mostly guitar that you use?
Mostly guitar. Yeah. Keys a little bit. But mainly, I mean, I usually come up with the song in my head without an instrument and then I start sitting down. And sometimes that's weird, you know, cause I start playing guitar and it just takes away of some of that because the guitar is such a very specific sound, you know, and there's a larger arrangement already playing in my head. But yeah, usually it just goes right to the guitar.
All right. So when you're in the studio producing something that you've now come up with and you've put a lot of thought and love and attention into already, and the producer doesn't give it what you want them to give it, and mm-hmm. you can't explain it in words, maybe. Because mm-hmm. that often happens, right? Does that get frustrating?
It can, yes. Because I don't tend to describe something as, you know, I'm not as technical. You know, I'll use emotive words like, I need a warmer sound. I need something, you know, that sounds like a dark cloud. You know, I mean, it could be whatever. It could be, I'm much more of a visual person, you know, the way I write, the way I think, the way I hear music, the way I experience music is much more visual, you know, and it reflects in shape and color. So for me, I have to describe things in that way.
Do you take direction? Are you good at that? Because sometimes,
if there's a level of trust, it has to be. Yeah, it has to be, you know, deep trust. Like I have to feel like they're on the same plane, you know.
And if you don't, do you behave badly?
Sometimes. How did you know, Cliff?
No, well, because you see, the studio is such an intimate thing, and this is your child. Mm-hmm. Each song is an offspring of yours, mm-hmm. and you become precious about it, rightly so, because if it turns out to be a child you're proud of.
You know,
you really want people to know it's yours.
You do.
But if someone messes with you, I mean, also you're an artist, so you're temperamental. By definition, all artists are temperamental. So have you thrown things? Have you screamed and shouted? What do you do?
I'm not quite the temper tantrum guy. You know, I've learned over the years to be more receptive, you know. So when I started doing more co-writes, that started opening up and it made it easier. And I'm much, when I first started out, I was, you know, I wanted to do everything. I wanted to play every instrument, you know, and if it wasn't going the way I thought, I would just get frustrated. And I still do sometimes, you know, I get impatient.
Major
because
control,
I have a
control freak.
But yeah, I have to admit that. Yeah.
And you say now you've learned to ease off.
I've eased off. But it's still there. It's just like I can't quite switch it off because that I have to switch off me. But, you know.
Well, speaking of things that are still there, when you've got a career like you have now, is there anything about doing those musicals when you did them, Jesus Christ Superstar, Jekyll and Hyde, Who's Tommy, and those things? Anything about that you miss? Or was that just once off, happy you did it?
I miss the collaboration, like working with other actors, which is why I like co-writing now. Because I love working with other songwriters, I love it, and that ties into what we were just talking about. You know, because I had to get out of my own way to do that.
Do you have a good business brain?
Yeah, I think I do. I do. I think you know, I've been when I first started out, I did everything myself, and I had to, you know, because there wasn't anyone, you know, and when I realized. You know, if I don't do this, no one's going to do it. But that's when things started to happen.
Yeah, it's that whole idea of, you know, show business. And the biggest part of the word is business, not
business.
Show.
I don't understand.
Yeah.
Explain.
I mean, it would be terrible if you were in the music industry and you were just taken for a fool everywhere. I mean, there are people who very talented, very brilliant people who've been suckered. Mm-hmm. By and in the old days, it used to be the record companies. Now it could be promoters, it could be publishers, it could be distribution people.
It's the easiest trap, and almost everybody falls into it at some point. You know, the sooner you learn that if you don't know how to look out for yourself as a musician, the sooner you learn that how important that is, the better.
Just explain to me what this Greetings from Tim Buckley was. It was almost like you did the voice, right?
Yes.
So it was just
singing voice of Tim.
Right. Buckley. I mean, is that almost like these actors, these Hollywood actors who do cartoon voices?
Sort of. I mean, it's a voiceover job, but this happened to be, I did it post. So what happened was the movie was finished.
They would play it and you would have to say it.
And I dubbed the actor playing Tim Buckley.
That's a lot harder than it sounds.
Yes. It was not easy.
Because you have to get it in exactly the right time.
Yes.
And you have to make sure you allow for the right mouth movements and all the rest of it. So it's actually very complex.
Mm-hmm. It was.
I did a cartoon once, here in South Africa for Disney. And we did, 20 takes for one 2-minute long clip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Stupid. How long did it take you to do this one?
I did it in a day, and then I came back for another. It was 3 songs, and I did it in a day.
Jeez, that's amazing.
It was intense, but it was a great gig.
We talked about living in New York just a second ago, but I'm curious also, because you did some off-Broadway stuff, and I wondered what it's like to be in one of those companies, because you're at the top of your game then.
I mean, when I toured with Jekyll and Hyde, that was the Broadway tour then. I toured with Jesus Christ Superstar, and I was just in the ensemble. It was like the first gigs I did. Did the Who's Tommy? I had a bigger role there. I was the Pinball Wizard. I mean, it's great because you just have to show up and be prepared. You know, everyone else does everything for you, so you're part of a big machine, and you have to be a real pro, you know, and it kicks your ass. Kicks your ass. That's what it does.
So this album, when is it out?
January is our target date.
Very good.
Yes, January 2018.
And until then, any performances here in South Africa?
Yes, but I don't know by the time this airs, they may be over. But yes, tonight I'll be in Pretoria at Railways Cafe. Saturday at the 30th of September, that is the Rumors Rock City with Tamar Day and RJ Benjamin as guests. And then I'm doing another Tutu Desk handover on October 11th with Tandeka Tutu.
That's amazing. Listen, man, good luck to you. It's very, very nice to spend a bit of time with you.
Indeed.
I'm sorry if I was too curious about how the whole creative process.
No, I love talking about that. Like, I don't usually get asked that as much. And so that was actually, it was nice to dive into that a little bit deeper. You know, really,
people who wish they had that ability and people who want to know more about how to develop that ability would be interested. Like, that's the stuff that I care about when I talk to a musician, particularly a songwriter, because there are a lot of great singers. There are a lot of good guitarists. So, you know, but there are very few really great songwriters. Mm. I sometimes listen to songs on, you know, an album that I haven't picked up for years, and there's a track 7 or 8 that I've never paid attention to before, and I go, wow, I wish I'd written that.
Those are the ones, you know, like those hidden tracks.
Oh man,
that just tell a little story that you don't hear over and over again.
Well, it's very nice to meet you, and thank you, Jan. I hope we'll see you again soon. Jan Closer, everybody. And the album will be out in January of next year. We'll make sure we tell you all about it.
Cheers.
Very good. This is CliffCentral.com.